540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Matt Piper. The first impeachment inquiry hearing into President Biden was 6 hours today. And we've learned committee chairman James Comer is issuing subpoenas for Hunter and James Biden's business bank records. Correspondent Skylar Henry.
The House Oversight Committee held its first hearing into whether President Joe Biden should face impeachment charges. But for the GOP chairman, it's not much of a question.
The House Oversight Committee will examine over 24 pieces of evidence revealing Joe Biden's corruption and abuse of public office.
Republicans allege the Biden family received millions of dollars in foreign money through Hunter Biden's business dealings. And when the Department of Justice began investigating, President Biden tried to protect his son.
Hunter Biden cashed in by arranging access to Joe Biden, the family brand.
The U.S. is 2 days away from a government shutdown, and at this point it appears likely as Congress has failed to cut through gridlock and reach a deal to fund the federal government. CBS's Scott McFarland's on Capitol Hill.
The House plan is likely to include money for a border wall. Also, potential cuts to climate change initiatives, diversity initiatives. There are abortion restrictions. The House Democratic leader told me today it's going nowhere. None of his members are going to vote for it.
CBS News has learned talks between the United Auto Workers Union and automakers have been active over the last 2 days. The union is set to hold a Facebook Live tomorrow morning to announce how the strike will expand if there's no deal by then. They're getting a bump in pay more than anywhere else. When it takes effect in April, fast food workers in California who were chanting there will have the highest guaranteed base salary in the industry, $20 an hour. The governor signed it into law today. It's coming back for more. After a week of drenching downpours for much of the East Coast, Ophelia is still out there. Odyssey New York meteorologist Craig Allen says New Jersey through to southern New England will get hit.
What is left of Ophelia, the ghost of Ophelia, you can actually make a claim that this is still part of what Ophelia once was, is now returning from south to north and bringing a torrential amount of rainfall. The possibility of anywhere from another 2 to 4 and locally up to 6 inches of rain to the same area that was hit so hard over the last several days.
The average long-term U.S. mortgage rate has now hit its highest level in nearly 23 years at 7.31%. Banking analyst Bert Ely.
Mortgage rates are moving up in line with the Fed's initiatives to push up interest rates generally to try and slow down the economy and reduce inflationary pressures. And it is having that effect.
This is CBS News.
You need to hire? Indeed is with you every step of the way, helping you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit. The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. A 36-year-old man was fatally shot by police in West Allis this morning. It happened near 71st and Greenfield at around 6:30.
It's definitely a domestic issue, and I won't get into whether if violence was committed before the police got here or not.
That's West Allis Police Chief Patrick Mitchell. 4 officers fired their weapons, resulting in the man's death, while another officer used non-lethal force. The Milwaukee Area Investigative Team was called in, and the Wauwatosa Police Department is leading the investigation. Milwaukee police believe that the shooting at Elsa's on the Park near Cathedral Square last night was not a random incident. 2 people inside the bar sustained injuries when someone outside the bar opened fire. Police don't consider it a random act, yet they haven't said whether there was any prior connection between the victims and the suspect. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight.
The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know what's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
You can't impeach someone before they've committed an alleged crime. Even principled conservatives are going to look at that action and say, come on, what's going on?
The Todd Albaugh Show.
Dan Knoedl, Republican of Germantown, said he was moving forward to uphold his quote-unquote constitutional duty, which is a joke.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. Direct from the Dairy State, it's Sharp Cheddar Weekends, a three-hour block of Wisconsin-produced radio, Saturdays and Sundays from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m., featuring Raised in Wisco with Joe Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, The Cripes Cast with Charlie Behrens, and Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown. You can enjoy it by the slice or enjoy the whole darn thing. Sharp Cheddar Weekends is radio so fresh, it squeaks. Listen in on the Civic Media Station or on the app.
Tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the folks over at Americans for Tax Fairness had an interesting little tidbit today. They pointed out that thanks to Trump's tax heist of 2017, and the Republicans, let's not give all the credit to Donald Trump. The Republicans carried the water for him, but really his only legislative accomplishment. So he's in Michigan saying how much he cares about workers and trying to get them on his side with the fake union members, which I got mind blowing. They've come out and said, look, thanks to that tax bill that Trump got through, his only legislative accomplishment, billionaires are now 77% richer than they would have been otherwise, thanks to them, because the bill was so heavily slanted toward the wealthy and, well, has contributed to the $2.2 trillion billionaire wealth growth. Now, remember, we talked about yesterday how, you know, from beginning of the pandemic through, $3.7 trillion in lost wages and earnings for working people, $3.9 trillion additional dollars in our billionaire class's pockets. Kind of, they seem to kind of pair up a little bit. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the tax heist and maybe what we can do about it, I've asked our good friend Morris Pearl to come talk with us. Morris is the chairman of the Patriotic Millionaires, patrioticmillionaires.org, the website. Morris, thanks for taking time for us.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Rick.
So what do you make of this? 77% richer thanks to Donald Trump. Elon Musk saw his wealth go up 1,222%. I think he took most of it.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. And there's 200 more billionaires in the United States than there were before the tax cut also. We went from like 550 billionaires to about 750 billionaires now. So we have over 700 people who are billionaires in our country. And the reason, part of the reason they get richer is because most of them own companies, like Elon Musk owning part of Tesla and X, or whatever they call Twitter now. And people like Jeff Bezos, Amazon, Larry Ellison, Warren Buffett, Berkshire Hathaway, Larry Page, Sergey Brin, Google. They own these things that become bigger and bigger and bigger by billions of dollars. But because they're billionaires, they don't need to have any income, so they don't pay any income taxes. The average rate of taxes these guys pay is like 4 or 5%, a fraction of what somebody like even you pay, Rick. And that's part of the reason why they are getting richer and richer and richer. And so many of your listeners, Rick, are just, they're not getting ahead. They're fighting to keep up and they're falling behind because they are paying taxes that get deducted out of their paychecks every single week. And these guys may pay taxes occasionally if they decide to sell something, but in the meantime, can just borrow against their huge stock portfolios for their entire lives and never have an income. And that's not fair.
No, I mean, it's quite remarkable to me that the numbers are so enormous, and yet you still have people who are saying, no, Trump is the he's the voice of the working class. He's somebody who, you know, quite frankly, he's our guy. I mean, I'm still struggling with that.
Somehow he may connect with people. I think because people know he's a fraud and people know that he like has no morals, but they think that everybody's like that and that he's just more open about it than everyone else is.
He's honest about being crooked is what you're saying.
Something like that, yeah.
So when he goes to Michigan on Wednesday and he holds a fraud of a rally with fake auto workers and fake union members and fake working people, this plays into that.
Somehow it does. And I think a lot of his supporters think, well, if I was rich, I would have fake people helping me. So everyone must do it. And maybe they're right. And maybe they really would do something fraudulent if they had a chance. But I don't think everyone's like that. I don't think most Americans are like that. But I think that Trump is going after a group that thinks, well, I've been cheated my whole life, and when I get the opportunity, I'm going to go cheat somebody else. And there's that mentality, and those people are going to go vote for Trump.
Do you think him going to Michigan, and now look, he went to a very red area, held a rally at a non-union facility. And as I understand, not even, you know, the workers who work in that non-union facility showed up. They had to bring in MAGA supporters and give them signs that they had made up. Do you think it's going to help him? Do you think this hurts him? Because it is a fraud. And at some point, people have got to tire of this, no?
I don't know. I mean, I live a half-hour walk from Trump Tower here. You know, I've never felt like supporting a guy.
How long is it going to be Trump Tower, do you think?
I bet he has some contract where they pay him money for the use of his name. And so, yeah, there's even a building over by the river where they wanted to take down the Trump name. And he came up with some contract that they signed, the building management signed when they built it originally, that he gets paid a certain amount for the use of the name. It has to be in a certain way on the top of the building.
Wow.
It's like, and he really believes it. He really believes that his name is worth so much. That's his basic argument in that New York State case about his overstating his financial statements. Because he said, well, my name, the right to use that is worth billions of dollars.
And the other argument, and I did want to ask you about this, because it's curious to me that one of the defenses that they made, and the judge pointed it out, is that he believes that he can't overinflate his property because there's always going to be a Saudi billionaire to buy whatever he wants at whatever price he wants. You know, to me, you know, that argument, you know, and I asked this on the show the other day, and I said, you know, if you own a house that's $100,000, is there somebody out there who's going to give you $500,000 for it just because they like you? Or are you doing something? Are they getting something out of him? I mean, it's curious to me that was his argument.
That is why he started his run for presidency back in 2015 originally, because he knew that would help him sell those expensive multi-million-dollar apartments, you know, on Fifth Avenue there. And he thought, you know, as a presidential candidate, everyone would want to buy, and he was right.
Yeah.
They made a lot of money. You know, that Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C., all the foreign people had to stay at if they wanted to see him. They made tons of money there. And it works. I mean, there are people who will pay lots of money to schmooze with the president.
And here's the thing. I mean, the sad reality is I'm looking at the polls and it's still neck and neck, depending on which polling agency you look at. You know, Trump's ahead or Biden's ahead. It's a lot closer than I would hope to be. And now you see these no labels, third way. You see these third party groups trying to jump into the middle of it. You got Joe Manchin yesterday who said he wasn't going to say if he was going to vote for Biden, because I got to assume he's one of the people that would run. This could be harmful to Biden, could be harmful to us, to working people.
Yeah. I mean, there are a group of people who are basically trying to make a lot of money running no labels. And they are making a lot of, they are. Essentially, they can't stop because they'll be firing themselves from their jobs if they stop doing it. So they kind of have to keep going. And their basic strategy is that they think in Wisconsin and maybe Pennsylvania, they can get high single digit percentages for someone like Joe Manchin. And then Trump might win like 44, 43, you know, by a tiny margin, if they can get, you know, a couple hundred thousand people to vote for somebody like Joe Manchin in Wisconsin or Pennsylvania. And that could be enough to throw all those electoral votes the Republican way. So we're very concerned about that.
So what do you do to combat that?
Well, one thing Dick Gephardt, who was the Democrats' leader prior to Nancy Pelosi, he's running a group that's talking to the major donors and explaining that to them, that having a third party as a protest, it really could throw the race to Trump, which is not what most of their donors want to do. So they're talking to people who are funding this no labels thing and explain to them how even a small percentage of the vote, you know, even if they get just a small percentage, that could throw the presidency Trump's way. And they're making plans to explain that to the population in general, the voters.
But come on, Morris. I mean, that was the plan of this from the beginning. This idea of a protest, no, this was all about drawing votes away from Biden to throw it to Trump. At least that's how I see it. The same thing with RFK Jr. It's the exact same thing. There are moneyed interests out there trying to get Trump reelected, because 77%, Morris, our billionaires saw a 77% increase in their wealth. That's the Trump legacy.
Yeah. And because they are not paying any taxes on all this money they're making. And that's part of why they're making so much more, and it compounds. Because in the first year you make more money, then the second year you have more money to make money on. And compounding interest works way better when you don't pay taxes than when you do pay taxes.
Now, you guys at Patriotic Millionaires, you've got a plan on how to address this. I know you're the Great Economy Project. You guys have been working on fabulous stuff. If we got the right people in Congress, if we got the ability to make the changes that need to be changed, how do we fix this?
Look, we are looking at laws like Oligarch Act that Barbara Lee from California has proposed. Jamal Bowman from here in New York has proposed some acts, basically to make people pay taxes as they make money, regardless of whether or not they sell their stocks, regardless of whether or not they get the money in cash. If they get more wealth above $1 billion, of course, we're not talking about taxing every homeowner and everywhere, but for billionaires and billionaires only, we think they should pay a tax if they get wealthier, and they should pay more taxes if they get wealthier, regardless of why, whether they inherit $1 billion, like, you know, five of the top 20 billionaires are people who never did a thing to earn their money, except for being the kids of Sam Walton, who started Walmart. And we think they should pay some tax on that. We're looking at the Oligarch Act, which says if you have more wealth than 1,000 average families, you should start paying a little bit of tax on that, but just the additional wealth above 1,000 times the average. So people with hundreds of millions of dollars will pay a little bit of tax on that wealth. The same way that every homeowner in Pennsylvania has been paying a real estate tax for generations, billionaires should pay some tax on their wealth too.
That is an excellent frame right there. That's it right there. Because every homeowner is, you know, I got to pay taxes until the day I die. And yet you've got Elon Musk sitting on, you know, a gazillion dollars, not paying anything. That is a good frame right there. If we wanted more information about the work you're doing, where do we go?
Sure. PatrioticMillionaires.org.
There you
go. Or TaxRich.com. PatrioticMillionaires.org. That's our organization. Patriotic Millionaires.
There you go. Good stuff. Morris, as always, I appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick. Great to talk to you.
Our good friend Morris Pearl. Make sure you check out their website, patrioticmillionaires.org, the website. Right back after this. Stick around to listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I gotta tell you, 77% increase in wealth for our billionaires. 77%. What'd you get? Now, again, you know, you hear everyone, you know, Biden inflation. I'm sorry. Let's talk massive, massive redistribution of wealth. As I said, from the beginning of the pandemic through our billionaire class, $3.9 trillion in additional wealth they put in their pocket, while you, me, and the other folks in this in the working class lost $3.7 trillion. Gee, there was a Tea Party group that was running around talking about redistribution of wealth. Is this what they meant? Let's go to the phones. I got Steve on line one from Chicago. Steve, how are you, man?
I'm fine. And it's an interesting point because on the one hand, you and I just the other night, we were talking about this Trump rally. And I remember raising the point with regard to who was going to be there because I noted that they had to stack the audience. And sure enough, they did. I mean, you know, this is a union state. I mean, you know, either all of the people who were at that plant have somebody in their family or had somebody in their family who was a union member who worked in a good union gig of similar quality. And then they look at what they themselves are making in a non-union shop. So this idea that you were going to get a lot of people out there to support Donald Trump and whatever his convoluted economic policy it was is ridiculous. People who work in non-union automotive shops do so because they don't have any other options. They would love to have a union gig, but, you know, unfortunately, union gigs are hard to come by these days.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this idea that people are going to come out there and yes, we love our jobs that pay us less than the people who have the union jobs that are the equivalent to ours. Yes, that's just wonderful. It's exactly what we want. I mean, come on. So, yeah, I mean, they were going to have to stack the audience, and they did. And I think that your other guest, he's dead on. I mean, to add insult to injury for people who don't know it, if you are a billionaire in this country, you don't actually go out and say you want to buy a $100 million home. You don't buy a $100 million home. You don't write a check. You take out a loan, and guess what? You and I may pay, you know, a elevated interest rate because interest rates have gone up. But even when interest rates were at a record low, 2.9, 3% for a 30-year, yeah, you know what someone like Jeff Bezos pays? 1.5, 2%.
Yep.
You know, if that. Why? Because everybody and their mother knows that he is a great risk. Obviously, he's not going to default on the loan. So there's no risk there, and you get to establish a relationship with Jeff Bezos in terms of your lending institution.
Or you do the other thing. You have it purchased through the corporation, and it's a corporate asset, not an individual asset. You know, I know business owners who everything they own, everything that they use is the corporate's, so they get to write it off, and it's a corporate write-off, which, again, is amazing that they can get away with it.
Oh yeah, that's how we create, you know, these tremendously wealthy CEOs. Okay, so on the face of it, looks okay. Well, this guy is making $3 million a year. Okay, hold it. That's his base salary. Doesn't include his stock options and so forth. Doesn't include the penthouse apartment that we bought him, the car with the driver, the private jets, all of this other stuff. So, I mean, the rest of us, if we wanted to have those things, we'd have to pay for them out of the salary that we were paid. But that's included in the package, and therefore, you know, everybody gets to go ahead and dodge the tax man because, you know, you're not being taxed on that sort of thing. So, yeah, I mean, you know, you get to fly your wife and children, you know, to Hawaii, whatever, over Christmas on a private jet that the corporation provided. And, yeah, nobody got – you didn't get taxed on that, but you got to enjoy it. If I were to have to do that, I would get taxed on the money that it would cost for me to rent a jet if I could ever do that sort of thing. So, yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, it's people on the inside all gaming the system, making sure that the system remains as it is. And the reality is that we keep going through this cycle. We've been doing this for well over a century where, you know, you get the super rich during the Gilded Age. And finally, when people had enough, you know, people began to rally, to organize. And it cost lives. It cost a lot of lives to actually do something about reforming the relationship between the uber wealthy and labor in this country. But we began to do that. And then as soon as we make progress in the courts and in terms of legislation and everything else, they start to crawl back with regard to where they were. They want to bring it back to the system that used to exist. And again, it happened with regard to the New Deal. And after we passed that, you know, and then in the subsequent decades, okay, let's just kind of erase this and erase that. Da, 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 da. And sure enough, you know, after a while, again, you start seeing huge disparities. And then you have to have another revolution. And then again, you know, here came Ronald Reagan. So, okay, the government's the problem. Huge taxes, cut everybody's taxes, especially the people at the top, and they'll make more money, and it'll just trickle down to all of you. You know, you'll go ahead and get rich just like the rest of us. Just count the days, because it's government that's keeping you from becoming rich. You know, we have to learn this lesson every few generations, and I think finally Americans have started to stand up. We're starting to see a lot of vigor in terms of the union movement in this country and labor that we haven't seen in decades, and yeah, it's about time. And unlike in previous generations where it was largely confined to the manufacturing industry sector and so forth, now, you know, we're saying, you know, everybody who works should be a part of this movement. You know, the service sector, the manufacturing sector, everybody. You know, because if you're at the bottom, you're at the bottom. What difference does it make, you know, what you're doing? But, you know, as long as you can segment people out and have them competing against one another and viewing one another as enemies, then you can't organize them, which, the people at the top have been very successful at doing. Yeah. You know, they're like, this guy over here is your enemy. It's not the guy at the top. It's the guy who looks different than you or is a different religion or is in a different state or a different part of the economy. That's who's to blame.
No, the old Jay Gould, the quote attributed to Jay Gould, I could pay half the working class to murder the other half. It was as true back in the 1880s as it is today.
Yeah, and that's exactly what MAGA is. I mean, MAGA is basically a bunch of poor and working class white people voting against their own self-interest. You know, I mean, if you're a billionaire and you voted for Donald Trump, I suppose, you know, you probably still think he's a crazy man. But hey, you know, this is the guy who was going to sign off on my tax cuts.
77%, Steve. 77%. Look, I got to tell you, I increased my wealth 77%. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and the people at the bottom are sitting around, you know, crying about and turning up to school board meetings to cry about some transgender textbook that's in the library. Really, that's what you're concerned about. Not whether or not you are going to have adequate money to retire, whether or not you're ever going to be able to retire, whether or not you're going to have enough money to pay for your prescription drugs, whether or not you're going to have decent housing, whether you're not going to be able to send your kids to college. No, that's not the issue. It's whether or not there are bathrooms where someone who identifies as trans is walking into one or the other. That's the big issue in your life, no, really.
It's crazy times we live in. But Steve, I appreciate the thoughts, man. Good stuff as always.
Thank you.
70. My mind just keeps. I'm stuck in 77%. 77% increase in wealth. And as Steve said, look, you know, these people don't take. They don't take income, so we don't tax them. So they have the ability just to, well, you know, take out loans and pay almost no interest. It's. It's really interesting to me. And it's just, it's where we are in this place. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. What do you think? Should we be taxing the very wealthy? Should we be doing something to push back on just how obscene our tax code has been? I know. We've been trained like Pavlovian dogs that whenever we hear about taxes or any of that, we're supposed to get all riled up. But I kind of get riled up by the fact that we've created a billionaire class by having lower wages, less health care, less retirement security, less investment in our children and in our future. I kind of see it that way. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. Would you be willing to stand up in solidarity with your fellow workers, even if it cost you your job? Well, on this day in labor history, the workers at Mersey Docks and Harbour Company in Liverpool, England, answered that question. The year was 1995. 329 Mersey Dock workers refused to cross a picket line that was being walked against another company on the docks. The workers at Torside had been fired for protesting against erosions in job security and increasingly unpredictable scheduling. They were speaking out against the casualization of their labor. When the Mersey dock workers would not cross the Torside picket line, they too were fired. Dock workers across the world stood up in solidarity with the Mersey workers against this unjust treatment. They knew if it could happen in Liverpool, it might happen anywhere. Pickets sprung up from Norway to Japan, from Australia to Italy, and into the United States. It was a global outpouring of solidarity. The strike wore on for 850 days. 1 year into the strike, dock workers held an international day of action in support of the Liverpool workers. Finally, 2.5 years after they were fired, the dock workers agreed to a settlement. They did not get their jobs back, but they did get severance pay. A film was made about the struggle. The proceeds were used to purchase a bar in Liverpool. It is known as the Dockers Pub and has become a space for working class organizing. The International Dock Workers Council was also born from this strike. Today, the council has 90,000 members, a lasting movement of solidarity. 20 years after the strike, dock workers from across the world gathered in Liverpool to remember the struggle. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
When megalomaniac multi-billionaire barons of industry suddenly announce that they are boundless geniuses who must remake society, government, and nature, perk up and pay attention. Their grand schemes of social engineering almost always go badly for us non-billionaires. Having spent their careers in the top-down, self-aggrandizing, exploitative corporate culture, they invariably turn to techno-solutions and AI computer models, ignoring such bothersome factors as human dynamics. So look out, for here comes a gaggle of high-tech billionaires from Silicon Valley planning to fix America's cities by building an urban utopia from scratch. They've chosen Solano County, northeast of San Francisco, for their startup city, promoting it as a hybrid of technotopia and European urbanity, free from the gritty realities of, you know, real cities. Their plan, however, did not include informing the people currently living there about their scheme. Instead, they dispatched secret armies of lawyers and developers to snap up the area's rich farmland, preparing to surprise the locals by converting their land, community, and culture into the gabillionaires' experiment in new urbanism. One of the moneyed schemers declared that, quote, "The idea is simple. Found new cities, free from old bureaucratic and legal structures, and explore bold new visions of how government should work." But that's not simple. It's simplistic. Also, wholly anti-democratic and un-American. But it's in keeping with the egomaniacal ejaculations of other self-indulgent richies who want to build cities that float on oceans, that orbit in space, or that are built on Mars. This is Jim Hightower saying, let's send all of them there now. Meanwhile, what if more of our billionaires invested their money in funding real solutions to real problems in the real cities America already has?
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
And I got to tell you, this thing with Trump in Michigan is just, it's remarkable to me. And I'm hoping that people will see the difference between Joe Biden getting out there and walking on the picket line and standing with workers and, well, the fraud that we saw on Wednesday. Let's go to the phones. We've got Dynamo Dave from Duluth on line two. Dave, how are you?
Very well, very well. Thank you for taking my call, Rick. I love your show.
Appreciate it.
I wanted to say a couple of things. One thing is, we need to call out Trump. He is the master propagandist of all time. If propaganda is the intentional manipulation of public opinion through lies, half-truths, and a selective retelling of history. He, every time he opens his mouth, he's doing that. And it's like he's hiding in plain sight. And for, you know, when he announced his thing and he came down the escalator, those people in that crowd were hired. And then he's hired, you know, this thing that happened in Detroit. Those weren't, you know, those weren't even union members, but he pretended or made it look like through media that those were actual union folk. And it's like, you know, remember VH1 had that pop-up video business where they would show, you know, and I could, you know, when he's on the air, they could do that, our corporate media, could at least, like, when Meet the Press is interviewing, they could pop up and say every time he's telling a half-truth or a lie or, you know, selective history, they could, you know, say something like, liar, liar, pants on fire and stuff like that. I mean, it'd probably be entertaining to see all those flashes, you know, those little bubbles around him.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant.
And people don't realize that he's spewing, you know, well, some people do, but it's like, you know, he just gets on whatever, and it's just everything, you know, that comes out of his mouth.
Yeah, it's like propaganda.
Not since Joseph Goebbels have we had somebody like this.
Yeah, he's got like diarrhea of the mouth. I think it was the lead negotiator for the UAW, you know, said, you know, pfft. You know, having this guy come in, it's like diarrhea of the mouth. And the good thing is there were no UAW members who showed up to that. So I was happy to see that.
Right. It's interesting. Yeah. Folks that, you know, who go to a strike, and usually they're showing their picket, their local or whatever the name of their union is on their picket things. And obviously that didn't, you know, wasn't shown. But you have to be kind of more sophisticated to see that this is going on, and we need, you know, if the media isn't into, like Les Moonves said, you know, Trump may not be good for the nation, but it sure is good for CBS ratings. Yep. Hopefully we're beyond that now.
Yeah.
You know, we need leaders. You know, the leaders are supposed to be the best of the best, not, you know, the
not
whatever,
this guy. No, you're spot on. I appreciate the call, Dave, man. Thanks so much. I love the idea, by the way. We should be trying to figure out how to run with that. I love the idea of a pop-up video. I mean, fact check them along the way, because there was a lot of craziness that went on. Now, good news. The Writers Guild has, their strike is over. They've got an agreement from what I understand. And that's why I'm thrilled to have my next guest come over and share some thoughts on what's in it. You know, what victory looks like. That's why I've asked David Slack to come back, TV writer, producer, former Writers Guild West board member, and, well, the guy who's been keeping us up to date on everything going on there. David, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, thanks for having me. Sorry, I'm a little scattered today.
No, this is great times. This is great times. This is good.
It's incredible.
Stuff. So what'd we get? I love victory. I love winning. To steal a Trump frame, I'm never going to get tired of winning. Tell me what we get.
Well, to put it in simple terms, we saved our middle class. To put it in simple terms, we saved writing as a viable career where you can make a living while companies make billions of dollars off the shows that you know how to create and they don't. In more concrete terms, we got a contract that is 250% of what they were offering us before we went on strike. It is our largest single gain for 11,000 writers. The gain in the contract is worth $233 million in the first year, $600 million over 3 years, which is the term of the contract. We won some incredibly difficult things to do. And this gets, you know, a little bit into the weeds, but, you know, we got protections from artificial intelligence. We got two-step deals for screenwriters and an accelerated pay schedule, which will help with the free work problems that they face. We curtailed mini rooms. We got script fees for staff writers. Staff writers, who, you know, the entry-level job. You could write a script for a television show and you didn't get paid for it. The script was free. So we fixed that. We've got a minimum room size, and we got the term showrunner defined as a writer in our contract, which was a liability. So we closed a bunch of loopholes and we won a bunch of things, and it's going to make a huge difference in the lives of all our members. I can't leave out Comedy Variety for streaming. That's all, you know, late night talk shows, game shows, stuff made for streaming, didn't used to actually get any Guild WGA terms, and now they are covered under the terms of our contract. So it's when you're pushing for, you know, like UAW, they're after pretty clearly COLA. It's a lot of things, but COLA's it, you know. When we went on strike in 2007, 2008, it was the internet. If we hadn't won then, all these streaming shows would be non-union. Here, we had a bunch of issues that were all really important. It added up to one thing. And that's, I think, hard to pull off, but we pulled it off.
No. So as you're going through all this stuff, I'm going, what did you not get? I mean, it sounds like you got everything you wanted. And my mind goes into, now how are they going to spin it to make it sound like you actually lost?
Yeah, no, I mean, they're already working on that. And look, there are a few things that we didn't get. There, you know, when we went out on strike, there were nine areas where they were negotiating in, where they had rejected our proposal and refused to counter. At the end of the negotiation, eight of those, they had made a deal on our terms. The ninth is one that we're going to have to deal with through enforcement. It has to do with writer producers getting paid for post in television. The studios argue that we should do that for free. We argue that our contract says they should pay us. We'll take them to arbitration. It'll be fine. So there are a few things that we didn't get. We didn't get weekly pay for screenwriters. We compromised and took that accelerated pay schedule. But I mean, I think this contract is proof that striking works, that you get more by striking than you would get by settling frequently. And yes, they put out a piece of what I call Bob Iger fanfic. You know, the PR people, Molly Levinson's PR company, who has previously worked for unions and is now signed to work on for union busting. Molly Levinson's PR company has put out a number of things in recent days that, you know, try to make it seem like the CEOs really brought this together rather than stonewalling and being out of touch and not involved for the majority of the, you know, the deal making process or for the majority of the strike. The actual deal, to get to a deal, took 3 days. Took 3 days once they got serious, sat down with us and negotiated in good faith. It took another 4 or 5 or so to hammer out the legal language, but the actual to get to a principal agreement on all terms, 3 days. And, you know, we were out for 148 days, as long as we were out in 1960, tied second place for the WGA's record. If we'd have gone another week, we'd have beaten 1988.
And again, this is, you know, the CEO class, you know, basically saying, we're going to make you do this to get what you need. And I've said over the years, you know, the strike may be the last arrow in the quiver, but sometimes you got to pull that arrow out and you got to be willing to shoot it off. You know, as an old timer told me a number of years ago, you know, you got to go on strike every 10 years or so to get people, one, to organize, two, to cross that onto that threshold, to know that they're fighting for something, and then to get people to understand that by standing up, they win. And I think we're seeing that play out right in front of us on multiple fronts. Your strike, the Teamsters almost striking, hopefully the UAW, what's going on. You know, 53,000 hotel and restaurant workers are talking about striking in Las Vegas. There's a lot. This seems to be the new the new season for striking.
It's a good summer. You know, and we've been sort of joking that it was hot labor summer, and now we're moving into fuck around and find out fall. I'm sorry, maybe I wasn't supposed to swear.
Yeah, I know.
I apologize. I'm so sorry. Now I'm embarrassed. But no, we're, you know, it's, you have to withhold your work. That's the only power that we have. That's the only power that we have, is the ability to withhold our work. So It's, you know, you wish that you could settle it with moral arguments and that that would mean something to the companies. But at the end of the day, shutting down the factory, withholding your labor, that is the only thing that does it.
Yeah. And look, I look at the courage that it took for you guys to do this. And I know a lot of people struggled. We talked to a lot of people when we were in the picket line in D.C. We've talked to folks here on the program. And this was a real struggle for people. And you had, you know, supposedly, and I don't know who said it, but they wanted, you know, management wanted people to lose their homes. You know, these things take courage. They take commitment. And you guys stayed one day longer and were one day stronger.
Yeah. And, you know, yeah, they made that threat early on. And you know what? People did. You know, people have lost their homes, both in our union and outside of it. And the day after the, you know, the first day back after the strike was ended, I found myself feeling a lot of emotions. You know, I was enormously proud of us. I was really, really happy about the deal. And at the same time, so furious that they put all of us through this, that they, for 148 days, shut down their own business, cut their nose off to spite their faces, lost billions of their own money, cost the Los Angeles, New York, and, you know, global economies huge amounts of money. $5 billion, I think, California's lost. So it's just obscene that they put us through this, but it's the only way to beat them is to break them, and we did. Yeah. And now SAG's sitting down with them on Monday, and hopefully, you know, SAG will, you know, get what they need and take advantage of the state that we've left the AMPTP in.
You know, what's interesting to me is, you know, you see this frame a lot. You know, we were talking to nurses in Buffalo, New York, you know, a couple of months ago, where the hospital spent, you know, like $10 million on scab nurses when the nurses were only asking for, I think, $1 or $2 million. And I'm not quite sure what the thinking is, and maybe you've got an idea. Is it just we're in control and we're going to